Hi, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Empowering Dietitians podcast, where each week I dive into a specific topic to help you feel more confident and connected to your work as a dietitian. This week, I'm talking all about imposter feelings and how they're contributing to burnout amongst dietitians. So if you're feeling like your self-doubt is so severe that it's holding you back, if you identify as a people pleaser, if you're feeling completely burnt out and exhausted, this one's for you. Welcome, welcome. So the last time I dedicated a full episode to imposter feelings was way back in November 2020, almost a full year ago. And a lot has changed since then. First and foremost, I no longer refer to it as imposter syndrome. And I encourage you to make that switch as well. See, imposter syndrome is problematic for a number of reasons. Namely, we live in a system, a society, a culture that literally breeds these imposter feelings in us, which we'll get to in a second, and then turns around and pathologizes those same feelings, making it seem like there's something wrong with us for having them. Plus, it's hugely reminiscent of the female hysteria joyride that doctors went on until only recently. And we're going to take a little detour through that whole phenomenon first to frame what's happening with these imposter feelings today. Now, I'm going to pause here and say that a lot of this episode is going to be uncomfortably gender binary. Because of the history of female hysteria, because of gender norms and roles in Western society in general, which we'll be talking about a lot today, kind of just in the context of confidence and imposter feelings, all of that is so binary. That's the whole issue, right? We as a society decided to assign one of two rigid genders to totally non-gendered things like occupations and personality traits and roles in society and expectations. And because of that, we've got all these people who don't fit into a neat little conforming box, and it's oppressive and invalidating and wrong. It disproportionately impacts non-binary and trans individuals, but don't be mistaken. Patriarchy and gendered norms oppress all of us by dictating and limiting how all of us are expected to look, act, and be. We all benefit from changing these systems. So again, there's going to be a lot of binary language in today's discussion. Partly that's our society, and yes, partly that's my own imperfections of grappling with our language and history and working on replacing all of the oppression and biases that have been ingrained in me with inclusive perspectives and language and mindsets. So to the extent that my own shortcomings contribute to the binary nature of this discussion, I apologize. And I am continually learning how to better address these topics from an intersectional and inclusive space. So now, for anyone who's unfamiliar with the term female hysteria, it was an actual medical diagnosis for a very long time. The American Psychological Association did not drop it as a recognized illness until the 1950s. That is not that long ago, considering that it dates back literally thousands of years. Like, I'm talking to ancient Egypt. And what, you might ask, did female hysteria describe? Well, the symptoms of female hysteria were, drumroll please, basic, normal, healthy female sexuality. See, women in Western cultures have always been viewed as inferior. And so any trait that is associated with women or femaleness is given a negative, or in this case, even pathological connotation. Whereas anything associated with men and maleness is the norm, normal, healthy, and ideal. Aristotle literally viewed women as failed men. And our modern day patriarchy can trace its lineage back to this type of thinking. If you're wondering where I'm going with this, hang on. See, men literally took any sign of female power or deviation, turned it into a disease, and oppressed women through it. By pathologizing a woman's body or what they deemed to be feminine traits, they were able to say, see, look, women are weak. They're not fit to hold power. They need men to take care of them and keep them safe and in their place. Women weren't universally sick and unstable. They simply weren't men. And that was enough to slap a label on them so they could be quote unquote treated or cured. The problem was focused on the women, not the men who came up with these theories, not the society or the system that created a sex or gender-based hierarchy in the first place. This is what society does, by the way. It creates feelings of inferiority and then blames the so-called inferior individual for not conforming to the societal ideal. Which leads us full circle to the imposter syndrome epidemic of sorts. See, women are said to, quote unquote, suffer from this syndrome disproportionately, and women of color even more so than white women. And dietetics is comprised primarily, disproportionately, of cishet women. And we have all been made to believe that there is something wrong with us. Something within us that's broken or weak or uninvolved or wrong. Something that has led to all these self-critical thoughts. We label it as a syndrome, which means the blame and responsibility lies at the individual level, and society and its systems are absolved. It's going to be a big hard no for me. Imposter feelings are basically described as extreme self-doubt. It's not like passing insecurities that crop up now and then. Those happen to basically everyone. I'm talking debilitating self-doubt. Like, you have a hard time acknowledging your accomplishments because you chalk all of your success up to luck. You have this perpetual feeling of being a fraud and inferior to everyone else around you. And you are anxious or terrified that someone is going to find you out and expose you for all that you don't know and can't do. It's this perpetual feeling of not being good enough, not knowing enough, needing to prove yourself. If you can relate, you're not alone. So where do these feelings come from? Not a broken brain, I'll tell you that. Not our uterus, like ancient Egyptians and Greek medical people thought. We have to take a look at our culture and its systems. First, the broader culture. And I've spoken to this before in past episodes, so this may be a refresher for some of you. Patriarchal capitalist culture is one of competition and achievement. Power is gained by dominance exerted over others, and space at the top is limited. So we are taught from a very young age, be better than others, work harder, prove yourself. We as a society value hard work, academic achievement, promotions, financial success, and material gain. We value credentials that prove our expertise. This is where perfectionism comes from. And imposter feelings are all tied up in perfectionism. Because if you're holding yourself to crazy high standards and putting pressure on yourself to be perfect, you're likely spending a whole lot of time recognizing how imperfect you actually are, how much more you have to grow and improve and learn, and therefore how inferior you are compared to that unattainable standard. When perfection is the goal, we are never going to feel good enough. Now, we have to layer on top of that, this like systemic, cultural, perfectionist pressure that we all face, to layer on top of that the traits that get reinforced by our social identities. For example, girls are taught that yes, we should aspire for excellence, but we have to temper that excellence with humility. If we're pretty or intelligent or talented, we are expected to be self-deprecating because no one likes a bragger, right? So self-deprecation becomes our baseline. We have trouble accepting compliments. We aren't encouraged to celebrate our accomplishments. And so we grow up feeling even less confident in our abilities because even deep down we think we're good at something, we're too afraid of coming across as cocky to actually voice that pride to others. I know that I can relate to this completely. I feel like I am a pretty confident person, like inherently. But I remember being a kid and thinking that I did a good job at something, but feeling like it wasn't okay to share it because I wasn't supposed to think that I was good at something. I was supposed to be humble. I was supposed to be self-deprecating. I couldn't brag. And so I learned to suppress my pride and I learned to suppress my confidence and my celebrations and my acknowledging of my accomplishments. I learned to be self-deprecating. And I started to struggle with confidence. Now this, in turn, leads us to a conversation about people-pleasing. Because, after all, why are girls taught not to brag? It's to make sure others like us more. Because girls and women are taught to be agreeable, cooperative, nice, placating. We are the nurturers, so we must make sure everyone around us is comfortable. So now we wind up with women who often feel like people pleasers, because no one ever taught us how to set and enforce boundaries. Most of us probably didn't have boundaries growing up. We were the ones bending over backwards for other people. So here we have a society that has raised women in particular to be self-deprecating, people-pleasing perfectionists, which is a literal breeding ground for imposter feelings. And I have to pause here and say that women of color, this is compounded because when they live in an oppressive society, it can be a defense mechanism to be humble, to be more demure, to be more soft-spoken, to be more aligned with people-pleasing. It's a protection against oppression. And so they wind up struggling with this at even higher rates than white women do. And white women struggle with imposter feelings at higher rates than men do. And now this is kind of for women in general in the society that we're talking about, but what about dietitians? Let's look at how this impacts us too. Now, in addition to all of those other things, most dietitians are helpers. We want to make a difference. We care deeply about people and helping people, which makes that people-pleasing trait even more glaring. So we want to prove ourselves to others. We want others to like us. We get super caught up in what other people think of us. And so we want to be perfect and good enough, and yet all we can think about are the examples of how we are imperfect and flawed and not good enough. There it is, imposter feelings. We aren't unstable or ill. We're not sick. We were literally taught to have these feelings. And then society came up with a name for it, and all of a sudden we have something else we have to work on. We have one more reason we're not good enough or perfect. We now have imposter syndrome, and the onus is on us to make ourselves stronger and more resilient and more confident. Sorry, patriarchy. I'm not falling for your sleight of hand. I can see through your tricks. Yes, there are absolutely things we can do as individuals that can help us deal with these imposter feelings. I wouldn't do the work with dietitians that I do if I didn't believe and know that this micro-level work can be effective. And I refuse to stop there. If society is the reason we have these problems in the first place, then society is what needs to change. And I will not continue to carry this boulder of self-doubt that society put on my shoulders. And you don't have to either, because it's hurting us. Imposter feelings don't simply increase our self-doubt and decrease our confidence. They trigger a domino effect that leads us straight to, can you guess? burnout. Because if we juxtapose never feeling good enough and never wanting to disappoint others, that is a recipe for stretching ourselves thin. So on this podcast, I've talked before about how burnout stems from time management issues. I've talked about it in terms of lack of holistic and comprehensive self-care. Those are both factors. Now it's time to really recognize that the elephant in the room is the connection between three of many dietitians' biggest challenges: imposter feelings, burnout, and perfectionism. Dietitians are facing burnout for so many reasons, like so many. One of them is the rat race of our society and the fact that enough is never enough. We are always on. We're always trying to do more, learn more, be more, help more. We say yes to everything. As a side note, I recently had a client who sent me a message apologizing and asking to reschedule one of her appointments. It wasn't last minute. She gave me almost a full week's notice. Her reason? That day was crazy for her, and she could tell looking at it that it was too much. So she looked at her commitments. She saw her appointment with me and decided to see if we could move it. And she was apologizing for that. Meanwhile, I was over here celebrating her, cheering her on from my side of the computer screen, because her ability to stop and recognize that her capacity was being overextended and open her mouth and ask for what she needed in that moment, that is everything. That is her doing the work and learning to respect her time and asking for what she needs. She could have easily fallen back into people-pleasing tendencies, shown up for the call frazzled and stressed. She could have tried to be all things to all people that day, including to me, but she didn't. And I think it's awesome. I talked about my business values in September on here, and one of them was having compassion for people's fluctuating bandwidths. I will never punish a client for needing to reschedule. Now, I have my own boundaries in place. If I had all of my clients chaotically rescheduling every 5 minutes, I'd go bananas and I wouldn't have much of a business. So I have cancellation and rescheduling policies, sure. There are definitely times where I say no to requests. Saying yes is going to overextend myself and lead me to subpar care and support, then I'm not doing you any favors. But I do try, and I'm always working to find that balance between boundaries and humanity, compassion. We need that as dietitians. We need more flexibility. And trust me, this is coming from someone who is chronically terrible at flexibility. I like plans. I like structure. I like to, mentally prepare myself for whatever it is that's ahead of me. Spontaneity isn't great for that. So I've had to learn how to get comfortable with the unknown and taking things one day at a time and problem-solving plans when they change unexpectedly. Anyway, all of this to say, we need to learn how to disappoint people, or maybe disappoint people. We have to learn how to stand up for our own needs so that we can be like my one client and say, enough is enough. I overscheduled myself, and now this is what I need to adjust in order to not go insane that day or that week. If we want to recover from burnout or avoid it altogether, then we have to be talking about the toll that people-pleasing, perfectionism, and imposter feelings play in it all. We have to unlearn all of the garbage that society taught us about what's expected of us. The never say no, always say yes to new opportunities garbage. The keep learning more and acquiring new degrees to try to feel competent enough garbage. The don't be such a pot stirrer, just go with the flow and don't inconvenience others garbage. The look at what other dietitians are doing, maybe you should be doing it that way too, garbage. It's all garbage. And the only thing it's doing is spiraling you down into a black hole of overworking yourself and never turning off and, ding, 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 burning out. So sure, there's individual work we can do to deal with the garbage society handed us, absolutely. And then we also have to dismantle the systems that handed us the garbage in the first place. Remember, this is not a you problem. You're the one who's suffering, who's experiencing all of the consequences. But keep reminding yourself that there is nothing wrong with you or broken about you. You are coping and acting the way that you know how. You are the way you are, largely because society molded you. Sure, natural predispositions and genetic personality traits, yes. And those traits then got reinforced by society. So when society acts all surprised that all these professions are burning out and all these people, women in particular, are experiencing imposter feelings, this isn't actually surprising. This isn't unexpected. This is exactly what happens when we value output over humanity and treat personal and professional development like a commodity. You're not the problem. You don't have a syndrome. Don't let society pathologize you for their own faults. And if you resonated with this, we've only scratched the surface on this topic. If you're ready for more, I want to invite you to join me for my free 3-day workshop on ending dietitian burnout and imposter feelings, November 9th through the 11th. The link to sign up will be in my outro of this episode and in the show notes if you don't catch it. As the end of the year approaches, let's work together to leave your burnout and imposter feelings behind in 2021 and embrace dietitian confidence and re-spark your passion for your work for 2022. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Empowering Dietitians podcast. If you're looking for more support to help you overcome burnout, imposter feelings, and the limiting beliefs that are holding you back from feeling confident and passionate about your work, I want to invite you to my first of its kind free workshop on ending dietitian burnout and imposter feelings. Signups are open now at www.empoweringdietitians.com/November21 event, all one word. That's www.empoweringdietitians.com/November21 event. And one last thing. If you found this episode valuable, it would mean the world to me if you would share it with your dietitian friends and leave a positive review. Those two things help this podcast reach more dietitians who need to hear these messages. And together, we can really start to change the landscape of our profession for the better.